Gethsemane's conflict and chaos, of which we spoke last Lord's Day, left Jesus of Nazareth in the hands of the armed force that went there to seize him. Of the followers of Jesus, Judas Iscariot led the armed force to arrest the master, and the others all forsook Jesus and fled. One of them, however, did not run completely away. To be sure, Peter put some distance between the scene of the arrest and himself. But we learn in this passage that we have read that he stayed near enough so that he could follow, not too closely, the armed force with its prisoner back down into the city. Matthew's account, and that account is in Matthew 26, tells us that Peter wanted to see the end. That is, he wanted to see what would happen in the proceedings in the council that concerned Jesus of Nazareth. And we have to say today that that desire showed some concern, at least, for the welfare of Jesus, with whom Peter spent 3 years of his life. Some concern, I say, because at the same time, Peter was mindful of the hostility and treachery that marked the atmosphere around Jesus. He witnessed with his own eyes the act of betrayal that Judas Iscariot carried out. And so he didn't wish to be too close to the scene. Now his resolve that he expressed to Jesus remained firm in his mind. Peter said, let us recall, that even if all of the other disciples would abandon Jesus, Peter would never be offended. Still, Peter tried to control the situation, to keep himself, as it were, out of the line of fire. He kept, as he thought, in the shadows, close, but not too close. The night in the early spring in Jerusalem, for that was the time of the year, was, as we understand, in the Arizona desert, cold. Peter felt the coldness physically. And he felt the coldness spiritually as he considered the ways in which the followers of Jesus, himself included, failed their master at the moment of crisis. They could not stay awake to support him in prayer. Peter reflected on his clumsy effort to start a battle against the arresting force. The other disciples were nowhere around, except for one of whom we shall read, whom we assume to be John, who had a personal relationship with the high priest. That disciple, we learn in John's account, was able to secure Peter's admission into the palace where the interrogation of Jesus took place. Peter joined the other people in the palace courtyard, where some of them had built a fire of coals. And the heat and the light of that fire drew Peter in. Now Peter imagined that his presence there was unobtrusive, that he blended inconspicuously in with the rest of the servants and the officers who warmed themselves at the fire. But suddenly, Peter found himself very conspicuous when one of the women servants challenged him concerning his relationship with Jesus of Nazareth. She realized that Peter didn't belong there, that Peter seemed out of place in that little gathering, and perhaps he appeared uncomfortable. When she studied his face a little more extensively, she was certain that she had seen him in the company of Jesus at some point in the recent past. But Peter affirmed that she was mistaken. Then another woman servant renewed the challenge, and Peter again denied any knowledge of Jesus. In Luke's account, we find that another hour passed and a man challenged him again about his association with Jesus. And John's account tells us that that third man was a relative of Malchus, the man whose ear Peter sliced off with his sword. And that man asked the most direct question to Peter: "Did I not see thee in the garden with him?" It was extremely uncomfortable for Peter, as all of the people now in that courtyard gathered at that fire focused their attention on him. He became angry. He declared with oaths and curses that he did not know Jesus of Nazareth at all. And then it was that the cock, the rooster, crew for the second time. And Luke provides in his account the detail that at that very moment, Jesus was in the midst of a transfer from one room in the high priest's palace to another, and he was able to turn briefly and to look down into the courtyard where Peter was standing. And suddenly, when Peter saw the eyes of Jesus looking upon him, he recalled the warning of Jesus, and he recalled his own adamant resolve and faced the reality that he had denied the Lord. This incident, this vignette, appears to have the most depressing aspect about it. But there is, in this incident as well, the wonderful element of gospel reclamation. Jesus prayed for Peter, he said, that his faith would not fail. There was a path of restoration along which the Lord would lead his disciple. This incident, one of the last we shall consider in our series, appears at first glance to offer nothing but discouragement and depression. But we find in it the truth that Jesus never abandons those whom he has chosen. Today we come to consider calamity and correction. Calamity and correction. The example of Peter is in the Bible, in each of the gospel accounts, not to promote our own smug confidence that we would never do anything like what he did. It is in the Bible to warn us that there are many ways in which we can deny knowledge of the Lord, but that in the event of such failures, there is a path of restoration. We are like Peter. Not until we face direct challenges concerning our relationship with Christ do we understand the weakness of our professed resolve to stand firm. His example should humble us and make us aware of the steps through which he passed that led him to the calamity. His example should also comfort us in the knowledge that Jesus will never cast off one of those whom his Father has given to him before the foundation of the world. So let us consider today the steps through which Peter passed in the hours of that trying night and early morning, before the cock crew. First of all, dangerous separation. Dangerous separation. We read in Mark 14, we read verse 53 just so that we get the context historically in which these events happened. But we read in verse 54 that Peter followed Jesus afar off. And in Matthew's account and in Luke's account, which we find in Luke 22, both inspired writers provide the same detail. He followed afar off. That is, he was following Jesus, but not closely. We sang that hymn just before the message, "Oh, for a closer walk with God." Peter wanted to walk with the Lord, but not too closely. That is, he cared about Jesus, perhaps more than any of the other disciples, the other 10. He cared about what was going to happen to Jesus. But Peter kept at what he imagined was a safe distance. So there was concern that Peter had for Jesus and the events that surrounded him. That is, Peter was not some callous coward. But there was also concern that Peter had for himself. As far as he knew, no one knew who Peter was. And he wanted to ensure that that situation did not change. He wanted to ensure that he would remain anonymous. It was the first step after the chaos descended on the garden that signaled that Peter was heading for the fall of which Jesus warned him, to put distance between himself and Jesus. Reminds us of Adam and Eve after they sinned in the Garden of Eden. What do we read about them? When they heard the voice of the Lord God, they hid themselves among the trees of the garden. Peter was here putting distance between himself and Jesus. Now think of Peter. He could comfort himself that he had not fled uncontrollably from Jesus, as the others had. They all forsook him and fled, but not Peter. I mean, he ran away a little bit, but not like the others. But still, he kept in the shadows. There was some shame, he realized that night, in being too close to Jesus, in having too close a walk with Jesus. So he tried to keep clear of that shame. The followers of Jesus, we learn in the scriptures, have to stay in close contact with him, even when that close contact with him exposes them to danger. And if time would allow us, we could go down the accounts of people in the world today, living in this time, who have had to face the reality of their closeness with Jesus and the cost that it may exact from them. Peter arrived at the high priest's palace then, not in the proximity of the armed force that delivered Jesus to his interrogators. Peter made sure that he was not coming at the same time. He arrived there in what he thought was obscurity. Now, Peter did not move in the circles of the high priest. So when he came to the door of the high priest's palace, he had no way to get in. But let us turn to John 18 and we will find out how he did get in. John 18. And verse 15. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. So that is how Peter gained admission. But when Peter passed through that door, supposing himself to be obscure, he took the second step toward calamity. Deceptive association. There he was separated from Jesus. That was a great danger. Now deceptive association. We learn in Matthew's account that Peter sat with the servants. Elsewhere, in John's account, we read that he stood with those who surrounded the fire. He was doing his best, he thought, to blend in with all the other people, with the servants and the officers. He was certain that no one would know his secret, and that he was one of the followers of Jesus. Sometimes he stood then, and at other times he sat. There must have been a restlessness about Peter on several accounts, but he did his best not to give himself away, because he had nothing in common with anyone else who was there. And he did what he could to conceal the reality that he had nothing in common with them. It is like the associations that we pretend to join to allay any suspicion that we are followers of Jesus. People go along with those in the world so that there will be no suspicion that you are a follower of Jesus. But the problem for Peter was that the reality began to break forth as soon as he walked through the door. And that led to the step that led directly to the calamity. And that is dramatic confrontation. Dramatic confrontation. If you go back to John 18 and verse 16, Peter stood at the door without, then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, art not thou also one of this man's disciples? The scriptural accounts depict the tension that Peter must have felt. He had a secret. He thought no one else knew it. But then this woman challenged him. In the passage we're considering in Mark's gospel, we find out she was one of the maids of the high priest, a serving woman. In verse 67, when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, and thou also wast with Jesus of Nazareth. You were among them. Maybe she had seen them together in the city in the days before. It's not likely that she was out in the Garden of Gethsemane. But here came the moment of crisis for Peter. Suddenly his obscurity was gone. He responded immediately and forcefully. Notice what he said. He denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what thou sayest. We can look at the account of his words as well in Matthew 26. Matthew 26 and verse 69. Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And then in Luke's account, in Luke chapter 22, verse 56, but a certain man beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him and said, this man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, woman, I know him not. And in John's account, the woman asked the question, art thou not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. He's saying, I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't know anything about that man. And then we read in Mark chapter 14, in verse 68, that after that response, he went out into the porch. That is, he left the courtyard. He went out into another area of the palace. And the cock crew, the first crowing of the rooster heralding the dawning of the day. Did that sound mean anything to Peter? Did it awaken him? Did it shake his confidence? Not at all. Not at all. Time passed. A second challenge arose. We find it in verse 69. A maid saw him again. Perhaps by this time he had come back in to the fire. It was a cold night. A maid saw him again and began to say to them that stood by, "This is one of them." So now she didn't ask him. She said, "He is one of them. He is part of that man's followers, that man who is inside being placed on trial." Again, he denied the charge. Verse 70, he denied it again. "I don't know that man. I don't understand what you're saying to me. I don't know that man." And then we learn in Luke's account that it was about an hour later. So all of this took place not in a rapid fashion, but over a period of time. Time was passing. So twice now, Peter denied that he knew the Lord, and about an hour later, we read in Luke's account, in Luke 22, and verse 59, "And about the space of 1 hour after, another confidently affirmed," saying, notice that, confidently affirmed, "of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean." In one of the other accounts, the charge was, "Thy speech agreeth thereto." That is, you speak like one from Galilee, not like one from Judea. His speech, his dialect gave him away. So a third time, here was this dramatic confrontation. "Come on now, you admit it. You are one of those. You should be in there on trial with them." And then it was that Peter became vehement in cursing and swearing. Verse 71, he began to curse and to swear, saying, "I know not this man of whom ye speak." The third time. And we read in verse 72, the second time, the cock crew. And if we look back at that account in Luke 22, we find in verse 60, in response to this man saying he's a Galilean, he was with him, Peter said, "Man, I know not what thou sayest." This was the man, as we learn in John's account, who said to him, "I saw you in the garden with him." This man witnessed the attack on Malchus when Peter, in a clumsy effort to take off the head of Malchus, just managed to slice off his ear. And this man knew Malchus, was related to him. And he said to Peter, "I saw you. I saw you in the garden with him." Verse 60, Peter said, "Man, I know not what thou sayest." As we have read in our passage in Mark 14, he began to curse and to swear. And immediately, while he yet spake, the cock crew. And we read in verse 61 of Luke 22, "And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, 'Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. That was the third step. Peter had arrived at the calamity that he had boasted would never come to pass. I'll not deny thee in any wise. And then came the fourth step, devastating realization. In Mark 14, we read, Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. And when he thought thereon, he wept. It's a vivid picture in the original language. When he thought thereon, when he considered the situation. But the word to think thereon is a word that has in its background a picture of casting something upon himself. And some commentators have suggested that Peter, realizing what had happened, took his mantle that was upon himself and cast it up over his head and over his face. While he wept, we read he wept in Mark 14:72. In Luke's account, he wept bitterly. There were sobs that racked him. Tears flowed from him. They were tears of recognition. What Jesus said to him came to pass. It was true. Before the cock crow twice, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter said, oh, that will never happen. And here it had happened. And he remembered what Jesus said. They were tears of recognition. We understand Peter's place. How many times have we come to a place of calamity in our lives spiritually, and we come to the recognition that there was no basis on which to boast ourselves, to express our firm resolve, to say we're just made up our minds, we're going to persevere. And then we come to calamity, and there are tears where we have to say we did not do what we said we would. And they were tears of revulsion and reproach. No doubt he was ashamed that here he who had boasted himself, he would never do anything like this. Here he was having done it. Coming face to face with the challenge, he wanted to shield himself from the consequences of that identity with Jesus. And now, he had nothing to do but to reproach himself, for he had denied the Lord. Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss, but here Peter denied Jesus three times with curses and oaths. And if we had to leave it there, it would be a very discouraging message. But there were tears of restoration as well. Peter wept inconsolably. But in his recollection, he could remember the promise of Jesus to pray for him. Let's look back at Luke 22. And verse 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, Behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. That's the reality, not only for Simon, but for all of the Lord's people. The devil wants you. The devil's after you. But notice what Jesus said in verse 32, "But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." Peter could recall not only the warning of Jesus, but he could recall the promise of Jesus. "I have prayed for thee." And as we sit here this morning and consider the reality of our own failures in the service of Christ, can we not remember the words of Jesus, "I have prayed for thee"? It was personal. So it is personal for each of us. Jesus is saying, "I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not." Jesus was saying, "Peter, you're going to fail, but there's going to be a way back." And we find that way back in John chapter 21. John 21 and verse 15. "So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" Some people think it was a reference to the fish. I am convinced it was a reference to the other disciples, because Peter had said to Jesus, "If everybody else is offended, I'll never be offended." So Jesus was saying to him, "Do you love me more than they do?" He saith unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." He saith unto him, "Feed my lambs." He saith to him again the second time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" He saith unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." He saith unto him, "Feed my sheep." He saith unto him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" They're using a word for love that Peter had used, which had to do with affection instead of sacrifice. Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, "Lovest thou me?" Peter was grieved because he used that word. And he said unto him, "Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee." Jesus saith unto him, "Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdedst thyself and walkedst whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not." This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, "Follow me." Here was the restoration of Peter. The Lord had a great work for Peter to do. It was the work of feeding Christ's sheep. It was the work of standing for Christ in the midst of an ungodly world, even to the extent of surrendering his life in testimony to Christ. This was the correction. It was a great calamity. There's no way to overestimate it. It was a great calamity. And the words of Peter resonated, we can be sure, in the minds of all those who were there around that fire. But Jesus would not abandon him. And in that manner, he does not abandon us. So in all our failings, which are many, we rejoice today that Jesus still calls us to love him and to serve him. Whatever our circumstance in life is, we serve him out of love. And we know that he prays for us. May God then give us grace to persevere, knowing that we have availing for us the prayers of our Lord Jesus, not only for us personally, but individually. I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not.